Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman here with Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Tim.
Christopher Woodward.
Hello.
And today is November the 30th, in case you're wondering.
Last day of the month.
It is, yeah. Tomorrow, December 1, and then we have Christmas is on a Monday this year.
That's right, yeah. And Boxing Day is on Tuesday.
Whatever that is.
Boxing Day.
Boxing Day. Yes. That British tradition that Canadians celebrate.
Okay. I didn't know anything about
telling you. By the way, boss.
You mean on December 26th?
Yes. It's okay. Known as Boxing Day. If you look at your calendars, even here in the United States, you'll see Boxing Day Canada. Maybe Australia does it too. It's an old British tradition.
I got you. So big boxing matches across the country that they televise or something, or what?
You box everything up.
Oh, Trudeau comes out.
Oh, I thought you meant
boxing
like
gloves.
Boxing matches, like
no.
The sport.
No.
Okay. Okay. All right. So anyway, December 26th is Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
Which, the seven Americans that celebrate that will have their day in the sun. Christmas is on a Monday, so
yes.
There you go.
Long weekend for most people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us, everybody, on the program. We got a lot to talk about today. Ray Pritchard is now with us. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing today?
Doing well. Good to have you on. You through with your travels for the year?
Yeah, I'm done. Well, in fact, we'll be down in Tupelo in about a week for the end of the year festivities, but after a long year of travel, I'm glad to be home for a while.
I hear you. Now, some of your family lives in Montana. Y'all going up there anytime?
Oh, I wish. You have to take about 4 weeks if you're going to drive to Montana because, you know.
From anywhere,
right? It takes a long time to get there. And, you know, once you cross the state line from Wyoming into Montana, it's still hundreds of miles you've got to drive to get to Missoula, where our kids live. So
yeah,
so I wish, but thank God for FaceTime.
If you think our country's overcrowded, just drive out to Montana. Yeah.
Go to Montana.
Yeah. We got some real estate still left.
Do you remember that family that came here? Their son was in like a carpentry competition in Georgia, and they were from Montana, and he said they drove 12 hours from where they lived in Montana and got as far as Omaha, Nebraska.
I know. Well, listen, Ray is in Kansas City, and we're in, let's just say we're in Tupelo, Mississippi. So, Ray, from us to you is probably about a 9-hour drive, would
That's
you say?
That's almost exactly it.
Okay, all right, let's flip that over toward Montana. How far does it take you to get to Missoula?
About 18 hours. No, 21 hours, I guess. It's 2 long days from Kansas City to Missoula. So
what are you going to say?
You drive to Denver, which I know is 400 miles because I've done that one.
From where to where? Kansas City to Denver?
To Denver.
All right,
it's about 400 miles.
Okay.
And then, Ray, do you get on the 25 north?
And go north and go through Cheyenne and up through Sheridan.
You mean you have to drive to Denver from Kansas City to get to Montana?
Either Denver, or we've lately gone north into South Dakota and then go from – what is the one the falls? Is it Sioux Falls? Is in on eastern side of South Dakota? I'm so confused. But then
you go through Rapid City,
and then – west of Rapid City, past Sturgis, where they have the big motorcycle rally. After that, it's just empty spaces for hundreds of miles. Beautiful, but
do you have cell? Does it have? I guess it does have cell phone coverage if you're on the interstate. Probably
don't go a half mile from the interstate, buddy. You're on your own,
right?
Yeah,
and I guess you sort of live from one truck stop to the to the next. Probably got a lot
I'm looking for those Love's Country stores, you know. Yeah.
I tell you, this is a big country. We when we lived in British Columbia, we would come south to my wife's parents lived in Mississippi. So we would make that track. And
You drove?
We drove a number of times.
Wow.
Mountain Home, Idaho. We usually try to get there the first night. But we would get up in the morning at 3 o'clock in the morning. And as soon as you leave town, total blackness. Now, I'm not kidding. Not even, there's not a street light.
Right.
There's just total blackness. It's really weird.
Right, right. When you're used to living in a town or city, yeah.
Yeah, at least there's a light somewhere. But we're talking lights whatsoever. It's the weirdest feeling.
Yeah.
And you pray, Lord, I hope the car keeps working.
Because you're on your own.
You're on your own.
I'm just honored that a man from Canada referred to our country as large.
Yeah, it's a big large. Country.
Yes,
it is.
Well, all right then. All right, Chris, what's the first story?
Well, it's the lead story pretty much in the United States. A lot of people on television talking about it right now, and it's been the lead story for us for several hours now. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger has died at the age of 100. If you are not familiar with Kissinger, he left office before I was born. You've no doubt heard him, and your world has been shaped by foreign policy decisions that he helped make with presidents like Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford. I have an obit here from Fox's Griff Jenkins that I can play to provide a little bit more on the life and times of former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. Clip 2.
Kissinger fled Germany as a teen, coming to America in 1938, becoming an American citizen in 1943, joining the army, shipping off to fight the very country he fled, receiving a Bronze Star for meritorious service. After the war, he earned a bachelor's, master's, and PhD from Harvard, and first got noticed by Nixon, who appointed him as National Security Advisor in 1969. Ultimately, he served as Secretary of State for both Nixon and Ford. He's noted for easing tensions with the Soviet Union during the Cold War and establishing U.S. diplomatic relations with China. Reaction to his death is pouring in. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo writing this: Henry Kissinger was a model of service and a great American. And former President George W. Bush offering admiration, saying America has lost one of the most dependable and distinctive voices on foreign affairs with the passing of Henry Kissinger. Kissinger is survived by his wife, two children from his first marriage, and five grandchildren.
What's not featured in that story was something I just aired at 10 o'clock on the news. Current Secretary of State Antony Blinken praised Kissinger for basically setting the standard for what it is to be a Secretary of State. And according to Blinken, he actually just had conversations with Kissinger to try to get some advice from him on how to handle things.
Yeah, he's quite a guy. The AP story on this morning, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, the diplomat with thick glasses and a gravelly voice. And if you're old enough to remember, that really resonated with me. And he had a kind of a monotone voice and quite a guy. I mean, as far as making history, do you know that he visited with the Chinese President Xi July of this year? He was still doing kind of behind-the-scenes diplomatic work. Yeah. Former President Trump had him in the White House a number of times to get his advice, so... I guess when it comes to international relations, Henry Kissinger will go down in history as one of the premier individuals in American history for what he did. The Vietnam War, China, Russia, you name it. Now, he had his people that did not like him, did not like what he did with Vietnam in particular. So, and you may hear from those people a little bit later today.
Well, he was in the 70s. That was his heyday.
Yes.
Serving Nixon and
Ford.
Ford.
Yeah.
Ray, a thing I remember about Henry Kissinger was, I mean no disrespect for this.
No.
But the first time I heard him, I remember thinking, what is a foreigner doing representing the United States of America? Because he had such a thick accent. Of course, he was an American citizen. He came here before Nazi Germany came into existence, right? Or to escape.
Around that same time.
To escape it.
38, I think.
Before the rise of Hitler as on the international stage, I should say. But anyway, he had a very thick, would that have been a German?
Yes.
That would have been a German accent.
Yeah,
absolutely.
German accent.
But
go ahead.
Think of it this way. in the long history of the United States. He's the most significant Secretary of State we ever had.
Yeah.
And in fact, he's, and I say that this way, love him or hate him, because there are people on both sides. But try to name four other Secretaries of State. You can't think of anybody else. When you think of, I mean, if I stop to think, who is Jimmy Carter's Secretary of State? I don't remember, but I don't remember who Lyndon Johnson's Secretary of State was. But everybody knew Henry Kissinger. There are some men who have the presence. They walk into the room, and without even trying, every head turns their way. He was that kind of man. Mm-hmm. And it was mentioned earlier that there are people who today, his detractors about what happened in Vietnam, but he was given the Nobel Peace Prize in 1973 for the Paris Accords, which later fell apart, but he was trying to get us out of Vietnam. Eventually, in a very sad way, we got out of Vietnam, but he was a man with, at least we can say this much, he was a realist in terms of foreign policy. He was a realist about the Soviet Union, and he was a big reason that Nixon made that trip to China in 1972. And I think that's one reason, Fred, he went back to China this last summer. He regarded that as one of his greatest achievements. I think the rest of us would say that's a mixed bag at best. But there's nobody, there's been no person as Secretary of State more influential in American history than Henry Kissinger.
I would agree. Next story, Chris.
Well, this could very well be the lead story, had what we just discussed not happened in the last 24 hours or so. There's going to be a big debate tonight. It's not amongst the Republican presidential candidates as a whole. One of the presidential candidates is going to be there on stage. And I'm talking about the Hannity special tonight, which has been coined the Great Red State versus Blue State Debate. This is going to be on Fox News Channel during the normal Hannity time slot and then some. It's going to air from 9 to 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 o'clock to 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox News Channel. Sean Hannity is going to be the moderator. Gavin Newsom, who is not running for president but seems to be in favor of the idea, should anybody nominate him to do so, is going to be there to debate DeSantis on things. I would be shocked if things like COVID jabs are not brought into discussion. DeSantis is probably going to have to take questions or jabs from Newsom on things like the parental rights and education bill from Florida, which the media loves to refer to by a different name. So a big debate, which could be interesting to watch, because next week on Wednesday, DeSantis will be back on stage to debate things with his Republican presidential challengers.
Okay, so this is on the Fox News Channel tonight at 8 o'clock Central Time.
Correct.
And it's going to last for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And it's a and there's no studio audience.
I don't believe so.
No, there's not. So there's Fred, it's just going to be Governor DeSantis from Florida and Governor Newsom from California. Are they like in two chairs talking to Sean Hannity? Do you know how this
I guess that's going to be the setup. I'm amazed, you know, not a lot of good things to say about Newsom, but I do give him credit.
Yeah.
For being willing to go on with Sean Hannity as a moderator.
Yeah.
Sean Hannity does not hold his politics back. He is very, very, very conservative.
Right, right.
So, and
he's to the right of DeSantis.
Well, to the right of DeSantis. Exactly.
I don't know, but I'm just joking.
So I think what happened was Sean Hannity had Newsom on back several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've been friends for a long time.
Yeah, so they're politically polar opposite.
Yeah.
So Hannity made the invitation to Newsom, hey, come on, and then he got with DeSantis, and of course DeSantis wouldn't turn it down. But Newsom agreed to come on, and they're going to have this live debate. And as Chris says, I think they're going to talk about COVID policy. The two states were just night and day. As far as shutdowns and all of that sort of thing. And then on the education front, LGBTQ rights, all of that sort of thing. It is going to be a colorful hour and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's tonight, an hour and a half. You know, I personally don't get a lot from these debates with even 6-8 people or more on a stage,
yeah,
it's, I don't know. I just don't get a lot from that. I prefer, I think what's more informative are more intimate, smaller setting, and get rid of the studio audiences,
mm-hmm,
like this. That way you don't have the clapping and the cheering and the booing and the hissing. I mean, there's a place for that, I guess. But for me personally, I just want to hear what they have to say. I want to hear the content, the thinking behind their policy, hear them express themselves. Those kinds of, that's why I prefer one-on-one interviews than I do even the debates, which get all the attention. But in this case, I think it will be instructive, Ray. Should be, because I don't think any one of these guys giving an inch. Newsom is he's a far left guy, and he's going to present that view of the world in politics tonight. You know, Governor DeSantis, very conservative. And he's outspoken about it. I mean, he was a founder of the Freedom Caucus in the United States House of Representatives when he was there a few years back. Then he became governor of Florida and has governed as, a red governor. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, and you're right, the contrasting styles and the way they handle COVID, mm-hmm, in Florida versus California, just a world of difference there. So it ought to be interesting to see the ratings and how this goes. Even though both of those guys, Newsom says I'm not running against, I'm not running openly. Yes. I'm not running against, but he is setting himself up for a run either now or later. With DeSantis, he is running against Donald Trump and Nikki Haley. I don't know who's
Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yeah, but Trump's the
and Chris Christie,
the leader, mm-hmm, and so it will be. It'll be interesting, don't you think, Ray?
Look, if I'm Ron DeSantis, I come out swinging. He's got nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving him an hour and a half with Gavin Newsom. The contrast is going to be exceedingly clear. He's, so to speak, playing with house money, right? They're giving him, mm-hmm, 90 minutes.
Right.
And I hope he comes out and, you know, jab, 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 hit him, knock him. Because I think all the facts... All the facts on the ground are on the side of Florida.
Right.
The way Governor DeSantis has led Florida, the stands he's taken. So come out swinging, Governor. He's got nothing to lose. Newsom is going to do his far left thing, which when that's exposed to the American people, when it's clearly exposed, when a good answer is given, the American people don't want these far-left policies. So I think this is a golden moment for Ron DeSantis, and I expect him to do very well tonight.
I think one area that Newsom is not going to want to spend a lot of time on is crime.
Right.
crime and punishment and, the far-left woke ideology of crime on crime is not working in California. Well, it's terrible. It's terrible crime in California. And so in Florida, it's different. They take a more law and order type approach.
Very much so. You have DeSantis. He's fired a couple of woke prosecutors down there. He has gone tough in the wake of the October 7th massacre there in Israel. He very quickly went after the students who were out there protesting for Hamas.
He's very proactive. We'll see how it goes, but I think probably if you're a lefty, you're going to say, Newsom won. If you're a conservative, you're going to say DeSantis won. But we'll see how it goes for both those guys in presenting and projecting their political. I think it's instructive and helpful because it mm-hmm. presents a clear difference between a conservative ideology versus a very liberal ideology on how to govern, whether it be a state or nationally. And, you know, should DeSantis not be able to overcome Trump in the primaries, there's two things. One is he could be setting up for a 2028 run.
A lot of people are saying that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll already have some experience on his side, and he'll also have he'll have his name recognition mm-hmm. higher than it was before running.
Yeah.
But with Newsom, you know, if let's say Biden's health fails him in the next 3 months and he has to drop out or he drops out, then Newsom sitting there, he might be able to win a brokered convention.
Yep.
For the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, in the summer for the Democrats, or run in 2028 himself.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
DeSantis will be governor of the state of Florida for two more years, should he not, again, get the Republican nomination.
Correct.
But anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I do have some audio here from three voters in Georgia, and the reason I bring up Georgia voters is because that's where tonight's special
debate. Oh, is that right? It's in Atlanta? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Alpharetta,
yeah.
Just north.
Alpharetta, yeah.
What you have here is two female voters telling Fox and Friends they want to hear about national security tonight from Newsom and DeSantis. The third voice is a sheriff who actually applauds Sean Hannity for getting this whole thing together. Clip six.
I want to know how our southern border is going to be secured. It's very disturbing that right now this administration does not care.
Who do you agree more with, the Gavin Newsom approach or Ron DeSantis' approach to the border?
Well, does Gavin Newsom have an approach? I mean, I think Ron DeSantis did a wonderful job in Florida in all aspects of governing that state, and I think he would have a real strong, firm direction for us to go as far as securing the border.
You know, 9/11 scared us to death, and we are close, even in worse shape. We need to get this national security under control.
The winner of the debate tonight might be Sean Hannity. I don't know. we got to do something. If we don't take America back on this next election, we can just cut the light off.
I don't think there's any doubt where those folks, region of the country they're from, right?
No, that is definitely not northern Maine.
That one first lady, she just had
They use a buggy at the shopping, when they go grocery shopping.
She talks like my mother-in-law. She's deep. Deep southern roots.
I understood
roots.
Every word. I'm here to translate America.
I know, but I'm talking about their southern belle language.
Yes.
Anyway, they were responding to the debate tonight in Georgia.
Yeah, okay. The Fox had Lawrence B. Jones at a restaurant there. It was a packed house. A lot of people sitting
around.
I'll
tell you another aspect. It'll be interesting to see, fellas, how long it'll take Donald Trump. Because he hates DeSantis. He hates his guts. And... And so anything he does is wrong. Mm-hmm. And he said that Cuomo in New York handled COVID better than DeSantis in Florida. You
and
remember that?
Newsom said nice things about him.
Newsom said nice things about him, so he likes Newsom and he hates DeSantis on a personal level.
Now try to bring that together.
I know, but that's what Trump does, you know. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't send out a message tonight saying Ron DeSanctimonious
blew it,
and he'll send that out before the debate even happens.
That's
yeah.
Right.
That's right. All right, let's go ahead and take a timeout. Anyway, we will see. We will see what happens tonight with respect to the blue versus red state debate between Newsom and DeSantis. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
If you're like most of us, you're paying way too much for healthcare. That's why I want to tell you about a ministry that has been meeting the healthcare needs of hundreds and thousands of Christians, and that's Christian Healthcare Ministries, chministries.org. Christian Healthcare Ministries is cost-sharing made easy. For over 40 years, this unique model has allowed believers to choose their own doctors without worrying about networks or waiting periods, since they are not insurance, but a faith-based alternative to insurance. Members not only get advantages from the affordability, flexibility, and reliability of CHM, but they also receive access to 24/7 telehealth services at no additional cost. It's no surprise that doctors across the country appreciate working with CHM, and so will you. It all starts with a visit to chministries.org/AFR. That's chministries.org/AFR. Christian Healthcare Ministries is the longest-serving health share ministry serving all 50 states. Share the good news with a friend, too. chministries.com/AFR. Make the switch today with anytime enrollment. According to a recent study of hundreds of post-abortive women, 60% of women reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they had received more support from others or had more financial security. And that's where Preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. You see, the reality is women are being pressured to make this fatal decision and are being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them, which doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you not only support women, you empower them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman to make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life and gives her the ultimate blessing, life. Your love can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, good morning, everybody, again, and welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of this show. I'm Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson and Chris Woodward and Ray Pritchard. And joining us now from Minnesota, the great state of Minnesota, is Jan Markell, who's with Olive Tree Ministries. Pardon me, got a little cough here. Jan, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Jan, is Minnesota a purple state, would you say?
Well, I think it is, Tim. I really do. I think one of these days this state's going to go and vote red, vote Republican, because we've had decades of kind of mismanagement from the left here, and a lot of people are fed up. And you know, we also call Minnesota Minnesota Stan because, again, I mean, it's we have a huge number of immigrants from the Middle East and North Africa, and we have some challenges here. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, but if you – the Twin Cities are pretty blue most, and then you get outside of that, you get outside of that, just red country for the most part, right?
Yeah, pretty much so. The rural areas are pretty red, yeah.
Fred, go ahead.
Yes, Jan, love your show that we hear here on American Family Radio twice on the weekend, Understanding the Times, 105 on Saturday and noon on Sundays. And one of your frequent guests is Amir Sarfati. And I heard him on with Tony Perkins on Washington Watch earlier this week on here at American Family Radio. It was a great interview. I understand Amir is in the United States. He lives in Israel, has his family there. He's a former major in the Israeli Defense Force. But he had some interesting things to say and kind of a warning at one point in the interview. And by the way, we have a story on that interview with Tony on our site, afn.net. But he said, you know, he believes, Amir believes, that Hamas took advantage of the political turmoil in Israel to launch their massacre on October the 7th. And Amir says you ought to be concerned here in the United States because we have political turmoil right now. And with our open borders, we know there's probably Hamas cells now in this country. And Amir is warning America that we may face attacks by Hamas terrorists on our own turf. I wanted your thoughts on that.
Well, and I know Amir well. He's a dear friend and a dear brother. And an Israeli who's gone through almost 2 months of a nightmare, needless to say, in Israel, living in his personal safe room with his family and I think a couple of dogs and a couple of cats, and it's been a very trying time for everyone in Israel, and I'm hearing from others, tremendously trying time. And he's right. I mean, I think all of us would agree that the neglect, the reckless endangerment of our borders, particularly southern border, is inexcusable. And you have to really wonder about the leftist mind. Surely they care about their children and grandchildren, don't they, in light of what may be coming across these borders. And Amir's warning is just dead right on. God has been merciful thus far, I think, in the Biden administration. We've certainly seen some wreckage, but my goodness, what could have happened thus far is almost unthinkable, and will it happen? And I think that Amir's warning, saying that what happened in southern Israel on October the 7th, which many people, friends of Israel, myself included, have still hardly recovered from the shock of it all, it's waiting. It's waiting to happen in our neighborhoods because of the recklessness of the political left in America and the fact that they seem to be so careless about, you know, the number one duty of government, which is to protect its people. And we're a time bomb. We're going to go off one of these days, and there's going to be severe consequences. So I hope, Fred, I hope folks will listen to Amir's warning. And but I say people, I mean I hope those in Washington. And that's why he's here. He's here mainly to address powers that be in Washington about what's happening in Israel and the fact that here's what you can do to prevent that here in America. He had an open-door invitation to address members of Congress. He had given up travel until probably the end of 2024, the following year, and he felt he had to come back and fulfill this request.
Well, listen, what Biden has done by opening up our borders to millions and millions of people, you know, is just derelict. It's just reckless. Yeah. It is impeachable, in my opinion.
Yes.
Just that act alone, what he's done by just by letting the world in through the southern border and not doing, and you know, it continues even to this day. And even Democrat mayors who are, they're only critical now because they're having to suffer the real life consequences of this, because they're having to find housing.
Their cities are being invaded.
Yeah. And that's what they're saying now, but they're not, many of them, I'm talking about Adams in New York, the guy in Chicago, Denver,
Massachusetts, governor. Yeah,
Los Angeles, San Diego. Yeah. They're trying to blame this on Republicans. Republicans are the ones wanting to shut down the border and have control and have security. But the Democrats, not all Democrats, but the Democrat voters, they vote for this. So you're going, Ray, you're going like, okay, you vote for open borders, and then you get mad because you have the consequences of open borders.
Yeah, you voted for this,
right.
And now you're upset that millions of illegals have come across the border, and you're throwing up your hands in surprise. Jan, I wanted to ask a question following up this article based on the interview with Tony that Amir did just a few days ago. There's a headline in it that said, Hamas responds to, quote, the smell of weakness. The smell of weakness. Mm-hmm. What, Jan, expound on that. What is that? What does that mean for the current crisis?
Well, I think that what is being said there is Hamas looked at the situation in Israel, and I'm not so sure I would call Israel weak under Benjamin Netanyahu. What I think the deeper meaning is Israel has been divided for the last year or two, and that people have been demonstrating for a long time in Israel about wanting some political changes. You have to understand that they have an intense right and left over there, just like we do in America, and their left stirs things up a lot, and the left has stirred things up as it concerns Bibi Netanyahu, who most of us love. I mean, he's been a strong leader, certainly there was a horrible lack of intelligence for this catastrophe on October the 7th. But the point is, Hamas struck probably because there was great division going on, and a tremendous division. They've been demonstrating in the streets for a year or two. And I think that the implication is, you know, get our act together here in America, because the bullies sense weakness and they sense division. And when they see strife and division in the country, they're very likely that's when they're going to strike. We've got that going on now. And again, as we've already said here for the last few minutes, are we a ticking time bomb where some could, how quickly we forget 9/11? All of us speaking on this panel right now remember 9/11, but I fear that many Americans have forgotten it. That can revisit us again at any day. And that's what Amir is here to warn against, and I trust we are as well today.
Jan, I just had one more question for Jan. Jan, when October 7th occurred, I was impressed with the initial response from Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who is Jewish, and he reminded us that he has relatives that went through the Holocaust. And he was very strong. But I'm getting concerned with what I'm hearing out of the White House in the last several days. They are now, the White House is now warning Israel, you better be precise, more precise when the war resumes. And then this morning, I'm hearing from Antony Blinken that we want Israel to abide by international law.
What about Hamas?
Yeah, nothing said to Hamas, nothing. And I'm starting to see and sense a weakness in the White House support for Israel.
Absolutely, Fred. You've labeled it exactly, exactly accurate. The problem is, the current administration has far more interest in number one appeasing Islam and number two being a friend to Iran than they do the care of Israel. And this is a huge concern in the pro-Israel community. Is this current administration and some of their affection, which is misplaced, to put it mildly. And kind of perverse, to be blunt here, but we can't fully understand it. It kind of is a little bit delusional. But we have sensed trouble from day number one. That's going to come from Biden and associates. And Mr. Blinken, he's one of them. And you would think with his heritage, he would be more pro-Israel. But again, they lean pro-appease terror and let's be friends with Iran. And Israel can probably take care of itself. It's terribly troubling, governing, let's just put it that way.
Is Blinken, is taking hostages, is that against international law, Fred?
Yes, absolutely.
Did he say anything about that? Or?
Oh, no, you know? No. It's one way now.
it's just nitpicking and critiquing Israel at every move, right?
Yes.
But Hamas, no.
Yeah.
All right, Jan, we look forward to the weekend program.
Thank you.
Who's your guest again this weekend coming up?
My guest and I, we're going to look at the top 10 stories of 2023 that I think will affect your audience. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Jan. Appreciate it.
All right.
That's Jan Markell joining us from Minnesota. Jan is the Olive Tree Ministries is her ministry, and her program is called Understanding the Times.
One of our frequent guests is former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah.
And Michelle Bachmann just has the knowledge about what's going on in the Middle East. Michelle Bachmann worked on a kibbutz for a while and was part of, when she was in Congress, committees that met with the Palestinians and put it to their face. This is what you're teaching your children. Mm-hmm. In the West Bank and in Gaza, teaching them to hate Israel. And, folks, that's what's behind this.
By the way, you hear the term kibbutz used talking about Israel. Kibbutz, for those who don't know, that's like a little farming community.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And they have a lot of those in Israel where they grow, they grow vegetables and plants. They have, animals. I wouldn't say it's exactly communal living, but something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when you hear the word kibbutz, think family farm, basically, and community farming in the land of Israel. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Fred, Chris, and Ray, and now Alex McFarland joins us from North Carolina. Alex is with on the Exploring the Word program with Bert Harper each afternoon, Monday through Friday on AFR. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, everybody.
So, Alex, we talked about this the other day. I wanted you to talk about it since you and Bert do the Bible questions and Bible study every day on AFR Monday through Friday. People talk about natives of particular land areas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Indigenous people is the other term that we hear used.
Oh, yeah.
Are the Jews indigenous to the land we call Israel now?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, a lot of people nowadays, especially, you know, young adults, that, you know, right now in America, about 32 to 33% of late teens to 20-somethings identify as atheist. But a lot of these people that are very secular, they are passionately committed in their mind to social justice. And just one of the mantras of the social justice people are the rights of indigenous peoples. Like a couple of years ago, right when COVID was coming out, I spoke in Toronto at the University of Canada, Toronto, huge. It's like the Ohio State of Canada, probably 50,000 students. And they were having, at that time on the campus, protesting Canada Day for Indigenous Peoples Day. Now, the reason this is important is because you talk about the people that are anti-Israel, pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian. I'm like, if ever there were a people group with an inarguable ironclad right to their land, it's the Jewish people and their right to the nation of Israel, the land of Israel. I mean, if ever there were an indigenous people group that they and their land have a bond that goes back 3,500 years, not a couple of hundred years, but 3.5 millennia, it's the Jews in the land of Israel.
Right.
So we're coming up on Christmas to celebrate the birth of a baby, a Jewish baby, born in the Jewish town of Bethlehem, the city of David. It's ironic that in the Christmas season, we'd even have to argue over who was there first. It was, as Alex said, beautifully said Alex, that for 3,500 years, from the time when Joshua led the people of God across the Jordan River and conquered Jericho and Ai and all those other cities. From that time until this, that's been the Jewish homeland, appointed to them by God and given to them by God. So if we're going to talk about indigenous people, Christmas reminds us there's nobody more indigenous to the Holy Land than God's people, the Jewish people.
Red. But go ahead, Ray. You through?
Done.
Oh, done. Okay, go ahead.
I think Alex wanted to respond.
Oh,
going to say, you know, consistency and truth and rational thought is not the strong suit of the social justice warriors.
I just wonder, you're a social justice warrior, right? And you said most of them are atheist?
Well, no, I'm not a social justice warrior. I mean, I'm righteousness and justice, as long as it
squares with God's word. Oh, yeah, but I'm talking about these Antifa types. They're not all Antifa, but they're all the most of these far-left causes are led by atheists or agnostics.
And people that they envision some global world utopia. You know, we had a stand for Israel in my hometown of Greensboro, North Carolina, about 3 weeks ago. And there were about 400 people, and we stood on a major thoroughfare peacefully showing Bible verses and waving the, you know, blue and white Israeli flag. And it was largely peaceful. A few cars went by and gave us a mean gesture. But a group of college students came out, and they were, you know, very much concerned about social justice. And, you know, I just ask, you know, what about Native Americans? Yes, the rights of Native Americans above American people, blow up Mount Rushmore, social justice, indigenous people. And that was a question I asked. Well, why not Israel? I mean, if you're going to advocate for the rights of indigenous people, why not for the group that was right. in the Holy Land 3,000 years before the birth of Muhammad.
They have an answer?
No. I mean, total deer in the, I mean, crickets.
I know.
But Alex, Fred here, how do you deal with people who aren't even dealing with reality? We played some audio from a city council meeting in Oakland, California, earlier this week. You had they had a resolution that they wanted a ceasefire, but also there was at least one council member who wanted an amendment condemning Hamas. Person after person came to the microphone at that Oakland, California city council meeting, and you had people saying it was the Jewish soldiers that killed those Israeli people on October 7th. They killed the Israeli children. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you deal with individuals like that?
Well, it's hard because, as we all know very well, the left, they make up their facts. And, you know, here's the thing. The left will embrace a dozen lies before they will acknowledge one indisputable truth. And so that's why, you know, what the news department at AFR, that's why it's so important. That's why, you know, citizens everywhere have to do the hard work of learning truth. And many of the people, there are people that have simply been grossly misinformed. Like college students that I talk to, they've sat under hyper liberal professors, many of whom the professors themselves are grossly ignorant of world history.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a problem of truth in our culture. Tim, I would say we're in a truth crisis in many ways.
Hey, I wanted to ask you a question. Switching topics here, Alex. Talked about colleges and universities. There was a story yesterday about major corporations in America, including Walmart and others, changing their policy. Go ahead, Chris, tell us what the story is, and then we'll get Alex to comment on it.
Yeah, this is from the Daily Mail. I'll share the link on our Facebook page. The headline is, "How the College Degree Lost Its Value. Nearly half of U.S. companies plan to axe bachelor's degree requirements after Walmart, Accenture, and IBM led the charge."
So they've had bachelor's degree as a minimum require as a educational requirement for employment
for some positions,
and they're doing away with that.
Yes,
Alex, are you surprised? And is this a good or bad move?
Well, I'm kind of glad about this, in the sense that it's exposing American higher education for the sham that it is. I mean, now, not all. I mean, there are some good schools, some Christian schools, and let me just say some good Catholic schools, too. However, secular, government-subsidized higher education, it's like Chuck Colson would say, 4 years and $100,000 to discover that you can't know anything.
You better be able to do something.
Yeah,
exactly. With that kind of money spent, if you want to get an engineering degree or you got to go to medical school or law or something, for that kind of money, you better be able to do something pretty quick that gets you a job that makes money that repays the student bills. But what you are avoiding, I think these companies are going to, I don't know if they're doing it for this reason. I don't think that they would say so publicly necessarily. But by companies, if this happens on a mass scale, and I think it will, where corporations say, you know what, we don't care about your college degree anymore. We only care about what you know and what you can do and what we can train you to do.
Yeah.
And I think that will take away the monopoly that the colleges and universities have. I'm talking again about the ones you're talking about, the vast majority of colleges, which are secular in nature. And they're using this time period, these 4 years, to indoctrinate these young people with lefty ideas.
Yeah. Well, you know, all of these, women's studies and African-American studies. And look, God knows I'm not racist.
Right.
I'm not. But so often these studies of ethnic minorities and, you know, people majoring in, you know, things like critical race theory.
No, they're just hate white people classes.
It is.
That's what
hate
they are.
Capitalism.
Teach you how to hate
America.
White people more. Okay,
and these degrees are useless, and the people that spend the time and the money, that they don't know anything.
Right.
I mean, and just, you know, guys, there's a requisite body of knowledge that you have to have simply to understand where we are in history. You need to know that there was a Protestant Reformation, the Enlightenment, the Revolutionary Period, the 19th century, the 20th century. And these kids, and I love young people. We work with thousands of young people every year. But the products of public education, they're just not taught.
Alex, we got a minute to go here. If this is not, I want to know, how can you help people find a college and university for their young person?
I think so.
Where can you recommend they go to learn? I mean, what do you say to that question?
Well, Liberty is good. I was actually on the board of Liberty in the 90s, and I'm a 3-time graduate of Liberty.
Underachiever.
I'll tell you, Caris Bible College, which is one of the fastest growing colleges out west. They have a business program, thoroughly godly. Grand Canyon is good. Houston Baptist is good. I had the privilege of speaking at Blue Mountain College there in Mississippi. I think that's good. But
it's university now. It's called. But yeah, you're right. It's right down the road from us here. Yeah.
It's a great school. Yeah. But I got to tell you, we have to be vigilant against the woke agenda. And we could spend an hour talking about what that means. But we're in a battle for truth, guys.
Yeah. Thank you, Alex. Look forward to the show this afternoon.
Blessings to all.
Okay. That's Alex McFarland. Yes, the school he was talking about is, he was talking about several schools, but Blue Mountain College, which is about 50 miles from where we sit, is now called Blue Mountain Christian University.
Mm-hmm. Yep. My daughter's a graduate from there.
Okay, yeah. Yep. Excellent school. There are many other schools across the country that do a fine job in educating and not indoctrinating. Maybe we get Alex to give us a place where people can go to screen, you know, that has screened out colleges for
good idea.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, folks, for listening this hour. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.